White Rocket Entertainment.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello and welcome to another of our special virus era AU Wishbone episodes. All I'll say this episode is, while John and I are hard at work on our next brand new episode focusing on a classic Auburn game from the past, I present part two of We Believed episode 7, Hard Fighting Soldiers, in which we look at, in this episode, the 2005, 6, 7, and 8 seasons leading up to the end of the Tuberville era. I hope you enjoy it and join us back here next week for a brand new episode. War Eagle. All right, so we really had a lot of rebuilding to do on offense. No doubt about that. And we lost Coach Chizik on defense. So we brought in Gibbs, I believe, from the NFL.
David Gibbs.
David Gibbs. So we had David Gibbs, that's right, as our defensive coordinator, and we had Borges back on offense, but we lost Jason Campbell. So Brandon Cox gets to step up, and he would be the quarterback for 5, 6, and 7, I believe. And we had to replace the running back, and so we bring in Kenny Irons. Did he not transfer from South Carolina or something like that?
Yes.
I believe that's right. So we had Kenny Irons and Brandon Cox, a whole new offensive battery back there. But we still had all those receivers. That was the one thing, right? We still had a good offensive line. We had all those receivers. We just had a new quarterback and a new running back. A new featured running back. But Kenny Irons wasn't apparently quite ready, or the coaches weren't ready for him. Apparently he wasn't picking up the blocking assignments to their satisfaction. And so we started Trey Smith at running back against Georgia Tech. And how did that game go, John?
Not well.
No.
Not well, Van.
No.
Jam-packed is Jordan-Hare Stadium tonight from the prettiest little village on the plains. It's the Yellow Jackets and the Auburn Tigers. Welcome to ESPN's College Football Primetime, presented by Polaroid. ESPN Saturday Night College Football is broadcast in high definition, presented by Philips. Everybody, Ron Franklin, along with Bob Davey, and welcome to Auburn, Alabama, in a series that started way back in 1892. Auburn perfect last year, 13-0. Four guys went in the first round. Other people left because of graduation. But yet, you tell me, after what you've seen down here, don't feel sorry for the Tigers.
Ron,
why?
Tommy Tuberville shocked some people when he said this is the most talented football team he's ever had at Auburn. The problem, they're inexperienced at some key positions, particularly quarterback. You can imagine. Imagine the pressure on Brandon Cox tonight. He's starting his first football game ever here at Auburn. He takes over a 13-0 team, and he replaces first-round draft pick Jason Campbell. Ron, a bunch of eyes in this stadium on number 12 tonight.
Well, you know, a lot of eyes are on the quarterback for Georgia Tech because Reggie Ball, 2 years ago, what a sensational year. Rookie of the year at the ACC. Last year, it went like this. It was a roller coaster ride. Which one shows up tonight?
We're going to find out in front of about 90,000 in a second.
Because we had gone undefeated. We'd won like 15 in a row going back to the end of 03. And people were saying, oh, let's just run the table again and win a national championship this time. And then we lose right out of the box at home against Georgia Tech.
Reggie Ball again.
Yeah. So we are now gone from like dominating Georgia Tech for 30 years to being 0-2 against them. In fact, I don't guess Tuberville ever beat Georgia Tech.
Mm-mm.
Man, that's far out. 14-23, and we put this behind us and install dang Kenny Irons at running back, and things get a lot better. If we had just started Kenny Irons in that game, I feel like the season would have been a whole different experience. But we start out 0-1. We shut out Mississippi State. We beat the snot out of Ball State. We beat Western Kentucky. Man, we really were bringing those big names. We had a game against South Carolina in the evening there that I only want to mention because this was Steve Spurrier's South Carolina, and the score is noteworthy in that Tuberville beat Spurrier's South Carolina team that year 48-7. And if that score sounds familiar, that was a score Spurrier beat Pat Dye in 1990. I was there in the stadium that day, and when it got to be like 41-7, I'm like, oh, score one more touchdown and make it 48. Let's match that score from back, you know, a few years ago. And we did, and I thought, wow, Spurrier, you've been on both sides of a 48-7 beatdown in, against Auburn. That's pretty good. We go win a good game at Arkansas where I believe Kenny Irons and Brad Lester had a good game, I feel like, maybe. And that was good, 34-17. Then we go down to LSU, and, you know, of course, the hoodoo, the magic, the white jerseys, whatever excuse you want to use, we always have a weird time down there. And how do we remember this game?
Well, the first thing is, in the pregame, Kenny Irons was caught on camera by ESPN guaranteeing he would get 200 yards against the LSU defense, which, again, the, you know, it was coming off, you know, some pretty good years.
And he did.
Backed it up.
He did.
He did it. He had 218 yards at Baton Rouge against that defense. So he was a huge thing. But
so now it's fourth down.
And how about this young kicker, Ron? Well, how's his pulse right now?
He's got an opportunity to send this into a second overtime. This attempt is going to be from the 34-yard, the 24-yard line, meaning a 34-yard attempt. Near hash mark. Ball is down. Got plenty of distance. And he hit the upright. He hit the upright. And the LSU Tigers have just won what will be classified as the right game. Now let's take one more look at just how close this thing was.
And if you're an Auburn fan, Ron, that 13-game SEC winning streak, to have it broken off the upright is disheartening.
And Bob, that's three field goals toward this end of the field with the wind crossing that either hit the upright or went wide left. It definitely had an effect on this football game.
John Vaughn missed five field goals in this game. Five. In a game that we was with 20-17 in overtime?
Yes.
So, I mean, again, five field goals in a game we lost 20-17 in overtime. Now, a lot of them were long, but
not all of
still,
them.
It was just maddening.
I don't have it in front of me, but I, from seared into the horrible, agonizing places in my memory, I seem to recall he missed three that would have just won the game, you know, on score during the game. And then he missed a fourth that would have won the game without overtime. And then he missed a fifth that would have kept the game going and kept LSU from winning in overtime. And the thing is, he was a great kicker the entire rest of his career. He was like a four-year kicker for us, wasn't he? I believe he was.
He was. He was really good.
But this was just that one game that was his Vietnam, you know? This was
it. And like you said, it's, I mean, it's a Baton Rouge curse stadium thing. And it just was – it's our equivalent of the stupid interception game.
Yeah.
Where we had no business losing this game, but we just like shot or we couldn't. The biggest thing was, like, again, we stalled out kind of in field goal range or long field goal range a lot against that defense.
That's an excellent point. Yes, you can blame John Vaughn, absolutely. But you also have to blame our offense for putting us in position where we had to try five field goals rather than extra points.
Yes.
If just one of those missed field goals had been a touchdown, we'd have won the game in regulation. Just one.
That's right. And this was the game that made the difference in the SEC standings of who won the West.
Yeah.
Those five field goals cost us the West.
Our only regular season loss this year before this was that
conference loss.
Well, that's what I'm saying. In the entire season, up until this point, our only loss was that Georgia Tech game, and it did not matter for the SEC. I'm sure that Andre Bruce thought that Georgia Tech game hurt our chances of getting to Atlanta because, you remember, he thought Florida State was in the SEC. But That was our only loss. Didn't count. Our only other loss all season in the regular season was this game at LSU. And if we had won this game, we'd have been undefeated in the SEC and in Atlanta against, I think, Georgia in a rematch with Georgia that we beat later.
Yes.
And this game knocked us out of Atlanta just as surely as that pass did against Georgia in 2002. As many times as Tuberville got us Western Division titles or co-titles, on at least two occasions there was one play that kept us out of Atlanta, 2002 and 2005. It's really unbelievable. I think LSU had a loss, probably to Alabama, knowing them. And so we tied them, and we had a share of the West this season. But LSU's head-to-head win, yeah, we were 7-1, they were 7-1. But their head-to-head win sent them to Atlanta over us.
I'd just like to point out that Alabama went 10-2 in the regular season but were forced to vacate all their wins by the NCAA because they cheated.
Because they're cheaters. That's right. At least we've never had to vacate any wins in the modern era that I know of, if ever. So they've been,
Not that I'm aware of.
They've vacated a lot. Yeah. Okay, so we have a big win over Ole Miss, big win over Kentucky at Kentucky. Then we go to Georgia, another game we got to talk about for a minute. We go to Georgia, and this was a shootout. It was a back-and-forth game. Brandon Cox and Kenny Irons and all of them, back and forth, and I believe with just a few seconds to go, it was 30-24 Georgia, and Auburn was on our end of the field, and it was 4th-and-10. And then what happened next?
2:05 to go, and here's your ball game for Auburn. They got to make a first down to keep this drive going. They need the 45, and this Georgia crowd making some noise like, tell you what, I think this may be louder than Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge right now. Four wideouts, two left, two right. Fourth down and 10.5. Knicks in motion from left to right. Georgia showing blitz. Low snap. Cox picks it up. Looks. Fires downfield. Wide open. Aramishu at the 35-30. 25-20. There goes Devin. There goes Devin. Is he in? Is he in? Touchdown!
He threw a long pass down the field to
Aramishu, I believe.
Aramishu. He ran, got tackled and fumbled the ball near the goal line, and Obamanu recovered. And we ended up getting the ball at the one, I think, right?
Yeah, he recorded it in the, it may have been Courtney Taylor. Recovered it in the end zone, but you can't advance a fumble from the goal, from outside the goal line into the end zone on fourth down. And yes, we were so mad about that, but it ended up working out perfectly. It's one of those deals where, like in the 2013 BCS game, we wished that Trey Mason had taken a knee on the one-inch line, you know, on his big run. Because when they brought it back out to the one-yard line, and we then were able to run the clock all the way down. Because Georgia would have had over a minute to try to come back on us and kick a field goal and win the game.
Yes.
But because they brought it back out to the one-yard line, we like ran up the middle for no gain, and the clock ran and ran and ran, and we kicked that field goal with like no time left on the clock.
The snapper, the holder, but put yourself in the helmet right now and pretend you're John Bond. How about the pressure, even though it's basically an extra point?
Here comes the extra point, what it looks like, but it's the field goal and it's the win.
And this was also called the John Vaughn redemption game because he had to make this one like he had to make the one at LSU, but this time he did. Of course, as far as I know, Sanford Stadium is not floating in a swamp on an Indian burial ground.
That's right.
Which makes a little bit of a difference.
But it was a huge dramatic play that people are still talking about.
Unbelievable. Not least of which because it's the last time we beat Georgia in Athens, believe it or not. And that's so
good
hard.
Gosh.
That's hard to believe because we absolutely owned Athens for decades. From the early 80s through 2005, we won in Georgia like all but twice all those years. And then after 05, it just completely turns around. We've won in Tuscaloosa more recently than we've won in Athens, and that just didn't right. That just doesn't
it's
make
truth.
Any sense.
Truth.
Yeah. And in the next season, we get 2006, we'll see that's the beginning of Georgia having this weird hex over Tuberville that just got strange there toward the end. So the only thing I want to say about the Alabama game that year is honk if you sack Brody.
I went to this game, and Alabama had real issues at offensive tackle. They had real problems there. And they were a good team, but they had a real kind of fatal weakness. And this was this Auburn defense wasn't as good as some of the other. It's clearly, obviously, not as good as the 2004 team. But we had really, really good pass rushers.
Yes.
Okay.
Stanley McClover.
Stanley McClover was the main guy, and he was a great on the edge. I mean, I think it was kind of in hindsight, but he should have been a better player than he was in the long term. But he was a great pass rusher. We had a lot of others, too, and they couldn't block any of them. And it was just an open season on their quarterback.
I think it was like 12 sacks on Brody Croyle.
Mm-hmm.
They were just all over him.
A crowd in excess of 80,000 gathered in Jordan-Hare for this meeting between the Alabama Crimson Tide, once beaten for the year, and the Tigers of Auburn, twice beaten. Offensive snap. Alabama has thrown a pass, and in every game this season, they have completed the pass. They're going for the 11th. Wayne Dickens, number 96. Third and 13 out of the spread. Auburn has three men down. They bring four. McClover from the outside. And Coyle is sacked for the second time.
Well, not a good start at all if you're an Alabama fan. Two sacks in the first three plays.
Third and 15. Coyle under pressure. That's three sacks in the first three possessions.
See, Alabama's not going to be able to throw on these guys on third down.
Third and 12. Blitz. Coyle, 10 sacks. 10. Call back, 11th sack. Antarius Williams. The 11th sack of Brody Coyle in this ballgame.
And if I remember correctly, this game was 21-0 in the first quarter, Auburn.
Yes.
And then maybe, I don't have the box score, but maybe 28-0 at halftime or something along those lines. And Alabama did come back and make it 28-18 because Tuberville famously goes into his Tuber shell when he has a lead in the second half. But this was as satisfying of a butt-kicking of Alabama. Again, it was only a 10-point game. But yet, it was a thorough butt-kicking of Alabama.
It was a dominant beating of Alabama, like way better than the score indicated.
Yes, yeah. So then we go off to the Citrus Bowl and play Wisconsin again because it's the law, apparently. And we lose to them again because it's the law. I just can't stand playing Wisconsin. It's like every other year when we go to a Florida bowl game, we have to play Wisconsin, and it's always something involving Barry Alvarez. Either it's his last game, or he's back as the interim coach, you know, or, oh, just for kicks, they're going to let him coach against us, you know. It seems like we get Barry Alvarez in a Florida bowl game every other year, and they always beat us, and I've never understood that. So we end the season at 9-3, but 9-3 was not a really good That's a distortion of how this season really was. Because, again, that first loss against Georgia Tech was an aberration and shouldn't have happened. The loss in the middle of the season to LSU was a total fluke because of five missed field goals. And then nobody cared when we had to go play Wisconsin in the Citrus Bowl. So this is a team that could have gone undefeated.
It could have, but I want to make a point, though, that like you said, this was David Gibbs' kind of one-and-done season, mm-hmm. and you talked about how great the defense had been the year before, and the defense was great at the beginning of the year, but at the end of the year, it was 27, 30, 18, 24 points allowed.
Yep.
So we had a real drop-off from 2004 to from the first half of 2005, and I think that the defense kind of sliding was a big red flag for everybody.
Yeah, and he left after that one year. And we bring in everybody's favorite defensive coordinator and current South Carolina head coach, Will Muschamp.
Will Muschamp.
We get two seasons of Muschamp. And the interesting thing there was he was really considered a Saban disciple at that point. He had been the defensive coordinator at LSU for Saban.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting to be able to pull him in as our defensive coordinator now for 06 and 07. And that 06 defense was pretty stout. There's a couple of games where some weird things happen. But for the most part, other than those, I guess the two games we lost because the other team was able to score a bunch of points on us. And that was Arkansas and Georgia. Those are the only two games we lost the entire year. But when our defense was playing right, as it was in every other game, look at it. Here's the defensive scores in 06, other than those two losses. These are all the games other than those two losses. The other team scored 14, 0, 3, 7, 17, 17, 13, 17, 0, 15, 14. But in the But in the two losses, they scored 27 and 37.
Yeah.
So the 2006 season, I'm just going to say a couple of things about it, because there were a couple of noteworthy games, not just the losses. We had our first big win over Washington State. We'll be seeing them again. We totally destroyed Mississippi State on the road. That's always fun. And we brought in LSU. We wanted revenge on LSU for the field goal game. And this was a defensive struggle for the ages, where we were up 7-3, and I feel like they had a chance. They were driving late, and there was some kind of a penalty, a holding call or something, and they got called back or a personal foul or something that kept them from scoring, and we won 7-3. It wasn't exactly 3-2. We hadn't got to that game yet, but 7-3 over LSU seemed somehow appropriate.
We stopped them twice in the fourth quarter, and at the end of the game, no timeouts left, Jamarcus Russell threw a long pass, and one of our defensive backs tackled them at the – they caught it, and we tackled them at the four-yard line and with no time left and won the game 7-3.
I just remember LSU fans being so mad because they really felt like this was a national championship caliber team, and they were ranked number 6. We were ranked number 3, and they were so mad. They thought they were going to come in and beat us, and they didn't, and they were calling foul and cheating and all that, so –
I really think of the 2006 LSU game as being kind of Tuberville's last stand.
Once again, Jerry Hennen.
2006, that Saturday, by this point I was actually blogging. The Joe Cribbs car wash was extant. And I labeled that particular Saturday when Auburn played LSU as Pinnacle of Human Evolution Saturday. Auburn LSU is one of just like, I was living in Ann Arbor at the time. I didn't know a whole lot of people at that point. So I went to the, because I couldn't watch just one of these games. Like, they were all being played at the same time that afternoon. So I go to the Buffalo Wild Wings to watch this Auburn LSU game. And I may have had a few beers, and I'm watching this Auburn game. And that game was an you slobber knocker gets thrown around maybe more than it should for as quality a term as it is. We should be careful about using the term slobber knocker because it's too good a term to bestow it on any average physical game in the SEC. But that Auburn LSU game was a slobber knocker. Like, that completely earned the title 100%. It was two teams going to war. It was a much better game than 2011 Alabama LSU. I will tell any LSU or Alabama fan that's their face. And Auburn won it. And it felt a little bit like a Pyrrhic victory afterwards. Like, at the end of the season, it felt like Cox just was never quite the same. It felt like the team almost, it took so much out of them to win that LSU game that was so physical and so brutal. They never quite reached that same level. 2005 was really, in some ways, very similar to 2004. They just got unlucky with Vaughn missing all the field goals against LSU. Weren't really certain about how they wanted to orchestrate the offense with Cox in the Georgia Tech game to start that season. But by the end of 2005, they were pretty similar to 2004. Obviously, they mailed in the bowl game, too. But, you know, you can ask Brody Croyle about what kind of team Auburn had at the end of the 2005 regular season. It was really that stretch, I feel like, that started in 2004 with Borges coming on. It lasted until that 2006 LSU game. After that, Then you had the Arkansas game that year, which was awful. You had the Georgia game that fall with, again, like, a, you know, Auburn was on the fringes of the national title conversation when they played Georgia that year and got their asses handed to them, quite frankly, by Georgia and Rick that year. And those were the games that, to me, kind of defined the late Tuberville era, where Auburn just doesn't show up, where they've got a ton on the line. Everything is right there in front of them, and they just lay an egg. And as great as a record as Auburn had in 2006, you looked at the stats, you looked at the way they played every game after that LSU game, and it just was never the same. The Tuberville era was just never the same. There were a couple of those 2006 games where they didn't really play enough, well enough to win the game. Alabama was even arguably one of those. And they kind of paid for it at the start of next year where they played well enough to beat Mississippi State. They played well enough to beat USF. Lost those games anyway, like in overtime because of turnovers. And it just really wasn't ever the same after that LSU game. From then, the Tuberville graph basically is in decline.
I honestly hadn't remembered that we played Buffalo that year, but we beat them pretty solidly. We go up and we win at South Carolina. I just got to point this out because it doesn't come up often. To this day, South Carolina still has not beaten Auburn in the SEC. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? They've never
beaten. It's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Now, Arkansas comes in, and they do all kind of crazy trick plays on us and beat us 27-10. Who was the offensive coordinator of that team again, of that Houston Nutt-led team?
Gus Malzahn.
Gus Malzahn. That sounds familiar. That name sounds familiar somehow. Maybe we'll see him again later, you think? I think we might. But yeah, he ran some great plays in that game. And I think that's the game where Tuberville said, you know, I got to hire this guy. And he tried, the story goes. So we'll get to that in a couple of seasons. College game day comes to town. Number 2 Florida against number 11 Auburn. We just got beaten pretty soundly by Arkansas at home, and we drop all the way to number 11, and in comes number 2 Florida. I actually had just moved to Illinois a couple of weeks before this game, and I actually flew back down just for this game because I wanted to see Florida come to Jordan-Hare, and they haven't been there very often since then, so I'm glad I did. So Florida came in ranked number 2 in the country, and they weren't beating our brains in, but they had control of the game in the first half, correct?
Yes. We weren't getting a lot done. In the first quarter, we had a field goal, and it was 3-3 at the end of the first quarter.
Yeah.
In the second quarter, you know, they scored. Chris Leak was that team's quarterback. They scored. Then they got a safety. Then we got a safety, and it was 10-5 at that point. Then we kicked a field goal. It's 10-8. They score another touchdown. Tim Tebow, again, was kind of the rotating with Leak. He scores a touchdown before the half. We kick another field goal. It's 17-11 at halftime. But in the second half, they do nothing on offense,
nothing.
0 points, and we have 2 big game-changing plays.
Huge plays. So what was the first one?
The first one was a blocked punt that running back Trey Smith, still on the team, Trey Smith.
Yeah, 100 years old. Up. He's out there in his walker.
Picks up and I believe does a flip into the end zone.
Yes, he did. He did a snowboard flip into the end zone.
Eric Wilbur in the football game to punt this one away. This is his first punt of the night. He'll take the snap, and he drops it. And he's going to try and kick it. He can't do it. Auburn picks up the ball. Trey Smith, touchdown Auburn! Touchdown Auburn! Touchdown Auburn! Trey Smith picked it up, ran it in. Tigers have tied it up, 17-17.
Play. Wow. Special teams right there. The punter drops it, and I don't know who got it, but there was about 8 Auburn defenders back there, and Trey Smith brings it in, and Auburn is tied it up.
10:51 to go on the third. Trey Smith picked it up, dove into the end zone for 6.
And then late in the game, as the game was ending.
Fourth down and 10. Here's your ball game. Gators need a miracle. From their own 20, they got 80 yards to go. They need a touchdown. Leak in the shotgun. They'll empty the backfield. Deep snap. Leak, the senior, steps up across the middle. Caught. They'll lateral it off. It's number 11, and back to Leak, and he falls down. Auburn picks it up. They'll run it in. Pat Lee, touchdown Auburn. See you later, Florida. Tigers win 27-17. How about them Tigers, baby? How about them Auburn Tigers? Pat Lee takes it in to make it 27-17 as the team races onto the field. How about the upset? 27-17 to the number two team in the country.
They were trying to make a play. They fumbled, and defensive back Patrick Lee picked it up and ran it back for another icing the game
on the last
touchdown.
Play, yeah.
And we won 27-17.
Yeah, when we scored the touchdown on the block punt, that tied it, and an extra point made us up 18-17. And then our defense rose up and kept them pretty much locked down throughout well into the fourth quarter. And then we kicked a field goal with 31 seconds to go. So our offense didn't score. In fact, we not even score a touchdown? We didn't score an offensive touchdown.
We didn't score an offensive touchdown.
We had 27 points on number two Florida and did not score an offensive touchdown this game. That is crazy. Vaughn kicked a 40-yard field goal with 31 seconds to go to put it out of field goal range, which meant that on their last 30-second drive, Florida had to just, like, wing it. And earlier in the game, what would they call him? The little ball of hate, remember? The linebacker we had?
Yes.
He chased Leak around the backfield. It looked like the old play that Florida State did where they chased him around until he fell down. But Leak tried to throw the ball and fumbled it. Florida insisted that it was an incomplete pass. Didn't matter anyway. We were winning anyway. But yeah,
on that last play of the game,
Patrick Lee, our DB, picked it up and ran it back for a touchdown, and we win 27-17 in a game we did not score an offensive touchdown in. Absolutely insane. And you know what it really showed was how this is the thing I wanted to say about the 2006 Auburn team. They finished 10-2. Or 11-2. Yeah, 11-2 with the bowl game. This is a very rare 11-win. We don't have that many 11-win teams in our history. This was arguably Tuberville's second-best team.
Yes.
And yet they didn't have much offense. All those receivers except for Courtney Taylor were gone. They played in 2002, 3, 4, and 5, and they were gone. Courtney Taylor was the only receiver really of any note on this team because he had redshirted in 02, and this was his senior year. So you had Brandon Cox and Courtney Taylor.
Well, we had Kenny Irons. We had Brad Lester.
Yeah. Did we still have Kenny Irons this year? Okay, yeah.
We did.
But it seemed like he was hurt maybe part of the year. In any case,
He was hurt a lot.
Yeah. The offense was not quite what it had been. We won a lot of defensive struggles in this season, relatively speaking. I know that, like, for example, when we beat Alabama to end the season and then we beat Nebraska, and that's always nice to be able to say, by the way. When we beat Alabama and Nebraska, in both of those games, I feel like we had about 100 yards of offense. And in both of those games, we scored the winning touchdowns when our defense turned the ball over on the other team in the red zone. I feel like our scoring drives, a lot of the time in 2006, were very short field scoring drives because of that defense.
It was a great defense. This win over Florida, we need to say this. This was Florida's only loss, and they won the national title.
Yes, that's right.
That's the only game they lost that season, and they went on and won the BCS national title. So this was, a gigantic win.
Yeah.
To beat them like the way that we did. That was a huge win for Auburn and for Tuberville and for this team. And again, like you're saying, you're right. It's an 11-win team that had inexplicably two home losses.
And that other loss, I mean, obviously we talked about the Arkansas game, kind of a letdown before we played Florida, but and Gus coming up with some wacky stuff. They ran like the fumble rooski type stuff on us and all that. The other loss that season that we haven't addressed was Georgia, and the only reason I want to mention that is because I believe this was the No-Sean Marino for them. This was the year, it may be a little bit before that, I'm not sure, but he's one of the guys. This was the first year that Georgia started just ringing us up. No matter how good we were, no matter how good the season was going, Georgia just started ringing us up for big points every season, and we just suddenly couldn't get past Georgia. And I don't know what happened or why. Since that 05 game, we beat Georgia. They beat us 4 years in a row after that 05 game. That's just unacceptable. Georgia beat us 4 years in a row after that 05 game, and the only times we've beaten Georgia since then were with Cam and in our 2013 national championship game run and then 2017 when they were ranked number one. Those are the only three times we've beaten them since 05, and that ain't right.
And this was Matthew Stafford. The running back on that team was Craig Lumpkin. But they intercepted Cox three times in that game.
Yeah.
That was ugh.
The Alabama game that year is noteworthy only for one reason. We muddled out a 22-15 win, but it was Nick Saban's first year at Alabama, and we beat him. And so we were number 15. At that point, we had 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 wins. We ended up with 11. And remember, no Nick Saban team has ever beaten a 9 or better win Auburn team.
It's truth.
So we go off the Cotton Bowl and have a good game and beat Nebraska in a very defensive struggle. And that gets us out of 2006 and 2007. Now, 2007, we felt pretty good because Quentin Groves was back. Muschamp was back at defensive coordinator. This was the last year of the Al Borges show.
And Brandon Cox was a senior.
Mm-hmm. For like the seventh year. He was there a long time in that decade. He had been Jason Campbell's backup in 04, and he was still our quarterback. Brandon Cox came on the team in the 2002 recruiting class, and he was still on the team as our starting quarterback in 07 because he had to miss a year with his medical condition, remember? He had like a medical condition that I don't remember exactly
yes,
what it was.
Yes.
And here's a report about that from CSTV.
A Trussville, Alabama native, Brandon Cox left Hewitt Trussville High School with some of the most impressive statistics accumulated in state history. But not one of the more than 5,000 yards or 50 touchdown passes in his high school career were easy. Sacked by a medical condition early in his career, Cox had to continually fight to stay on the field.
He was experiencing double vision, is how it started, and a little bit of difficulty swallowing, and that was our first sign.
His eyes started hurting, and he had a real severe headache, so, you know, we really didn't know what was going on. Finally, we went to see a doctor at UAB, and he said that he thought that he may have myasthenia gravis, which we had no clue what that even was.
Myasthenia gravis is a rare neuromuscular disease triggered by a faulty immune system. While there's no cure for the illness, the symptoms can be lessened with proper medication.
It really took me about 6 months to actually get back to full health. Got back about 100%, you know, somewhere mid-football season, my 10th grade year. I was on medicine and it really didn't affect me again until I came down here.
When Cox arrived at Auburn for a voluntary workout in 2002, his earlier symptoms returned. For some time prior to his arrival, doctors had slowly taken Brandon off his medication, nervous what long-term exposure to steroids might do to his body.
I went down to the beach and I started having double vision, and I really didn't think anything about it. I thought maybe it was something to do with my eyesight.
Lingering effects of his disease, combined with a concussion suffered from a car accident over the summer, forced Cox to return home.
Having the double vision, you know, it was miserable. You know, I didn't have any energy. I just, you know, laid around the house all the time.
He stayed in his room quite a bit, and it bothered him a lot. And I would never press the issue like, Brandon, you know, you need to get back to school. And finally, he said, I'm ready to go back. And so all of that worked out real good, and he hasn't missed a beat since.
Brandon rejoined the team before the 2003 season. Now, 3 years later, Cox is in a position that at one time seemed unattainable.
Watching him walk out on that field every game, I think about that what he almost gave up. And I'm very thankful that he did.
I thought I'd come back and, you know, kind of maybe be a backup and just, you know, get a good degree. You know, I know last year there were a couple times where I sat back and realized, you know, I was that close to not being able to be in that position. And it was a dream of mine to be play college and be a quarterback and just see those dreams come true.
So he was actually a true freshman in 02 with all those receivers that came on after Spurrier. He was the one that was going to go to Florida with Spurrier when Spurrier left Florida to go to the Redskins. Brandon Cox decided to come to Auburn. And then he missed a year and then ended up being Campbell's backup in 04 and then got to play 3 years after that as the starter. And was a very solid quarterback. I mean, we should say something here about Brandon Cox. He was
really good. He won a bunch of big games for us.
He gets overshadowed by guys on either side of him, but he was a very, very dependable, solid.
My accuracy throwing the ball and just managing the game. You know, I'm not a flashy quarterback. Don't run the ball. Don't have a great arm. You know, my strength is managing the game.
He got hurt a lot. He was a tough kid, though. He played through it.
Mm-hmm.
He had a leg injury, I remember, that really gave him trouble in 07, I believe, but he was able to play through it as we brought in Cody Burns to be our other quarterback, and they split time some in 07, I believe. So, 07, the offense was just never quite up to par that year. We lost to South Florida in overtime at home on September 8th. And we had that one big win at Florida. Florida was number four, and we go down to Florida, and we beat them 20-17. But the key play of this game and what it mattered was this meant that Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow both would forever be 0-2 against Auburn. They never beat us, neither one of them.
It's a great thing.
And this was the game where it was 17-17 in the fourth quarter, and we get down in field goal range, and Wes Byram comes out as a freshman. The same kid that 3 years later is going to be in his last game kicking against Oregon. In his first season, goes down to the swamp. And do you remember how that field goal played out?
Well, Urban Meyer called a timeout to ice the kicker.
Yeah, even as Byram was kicking it.
Yes. He called timeout, and then Byram lines up, kicks it again, and then turns to the Florida bench, does a gator chomp.
Oh.
The snapper is Robert Shiver, a sophomore out of Thomasville, Georgia. The holder is Matthew Motley, a senior from Opelika, and Wes Byram, a freshman out of Fort Lauderdale, trying to put it through to give Auburn the win. There's the snap, the place, the kick is up, the kick is long enough, the kick is good!
Good!
See you later, alligator! Tigers win! 20-17!
How about those Tigers coming in here on the foot of a righty freshman? I hope Lee Corso and Kirk Street never pick Auburn to have a chance again.
The Tigers have come to the swamp, drained it, and made it their own. 20-17, Auburn a winner tonight over the third-ranked Florida Gators. Can you believe it?
Can you say 10 out of 11 top 10s going down? Wes Byram, the freshman from Fort Lauderdale, Alabama, puts it through and puts his seal on this rivalry between Auburn and Florida.
How about those Auburn Tigers? Oh, my goodness.
No one. You watch the TV, you can't help but watch it. No one. Mr. Corso, not a chance. Mr. Herbstreit, no way. Florida will wipe them clean. Well, there was 85 guys on that field and another 20 or so coaches and a network that believed.
Indeed, indeed. Auburn has won 9 of its last 10 games against teams ranked in the top 10. It snaps an 18-game home winning streak for the Gators. And Auburn now, they've won 13 games in a row and wearing those beautiful white uniforms. And tonight's victory is about as pretty as they come, 20-17.
You gotta love it. That's when we all fell in love with Wesley Byram then. And if he had gone the rest of his career and never kicked another super meaningful field goal, he still would have been a hero. But like I said, 3 years later in Arizona, he's going to come through for us again. You know, I know that that Daniel Carlson, who followed him, was so great. But honestly, if you're asking me to pick one Auburn kicker from the last 20 years, as much as Carlson is so great, I have a hard time not picking old Mr. Reliable Byram, you know?
I hear you.
He delivered when it was on the line every time, it seemed like. So a huge win over Florida, beating Urban Meyer, beating Tim Tebow again. Other games of note, really, we lost a... This is the LSU game in Tiger Stadium. Walk us through what happened at the end of this game real quick, John.
So this is the kind of game where Les Miles gets a reputation for being Les Miles crazy.
Yes.
And they're in field goal range. You know, the game's, you know, I guess it's like 24-23 or 24-24, and they have the ball. They're in field goal range. They're going to kick a field goal and win the game. And instead, with the clock running down, Miles calls a long pass into the end zone, and it kind of catches Auburn by surprise and everybody in the country by surprise. And they hit it, and they go on to win 30-24. And it was a big kind of a shocking ending to that game. But again, another game where we're beating them in Baton Rouge and they pull it out at the end of the game and beat us. It was a tough one.
Yeah, 05 and 07, we should have beaten LSU down there. And it's not just Gus that lets LSU games get away. It was Tuberville as well. And the weird thing about it was that Les Miles acted like, well, I figure I'll throw that pass, and if it's incomplete, then I'll kick the field goal. And everybody's like, you didn't have time. It was one or the other.
Yeah, he got lucky because I think there ended up being a second or two left on the clock, but there was a real chance that there wasn't. Like, we could have sacked the quarterback, or he could have taken an extra second, and it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, it wouldn't have worked, exactly. He coached it like he had time for two plays, and everybody else in the world thought you did not have time for two plays there. But they win it, and then, of course, again, Georgia beats us down in Athens. It just, they were on that streak now. And so, you know what, I said 06 was the Saban win, but I was wrong. It's 07 is the win over Saban in his first year. 06 was the last Mike Shula win. So this is the year 07 that we beat Saban in his first year, but it's only 17-10 because we didn't have a lot of offense. We just had a good defense, and Alabama was still building back. And so we get to go off and play Clemson in the Georgia Dome. I was at this game on New
Year's
Eve.
First of many.
Yes.
Clemson.
Well, not even the first. It depends on how far you go back, because we played them in the same bowl game in 97, I remember. But, yeah, we go and play Clemson in the Georgia Dome. This is the game where we had fired Al Borges and already brought in Tony Franklin. And if you remember, all the word leading up to this game was, there's not enough time to install Franklin's spread offense, so we're going to use the existing offense, and Franklin's just going to call the plays. And instead, Franklin installed his offense before the bowl game, and we came out running completely different plays than we had the entire season. And do you remember the other weird thing that Franklin did in this game?
Mm-mm.
We swapped quarterbacks every play.
That's right.
We did the Steve Spurrier thing. Except that Spurrier did it when he was mad, you know? And Franklin just did it as a strategy. And so we would send in Cox, and he'd throw a pass. And then we'd send in Cody Burns, and he'd run. And they just went back and forth, back and forth. And it made your head spin. In fact, it makes me want to go drag that game out of YouTube or something and watch it over again just to see it because it was so crazy. But at the end, it was 20-20 in overtime. No. It was 17-17, I believe, at the end of the game. And it goes to overtime. And Clemson got the ball first and kicked a field goal and made it 20-17. And then we got the ball. And on the last play,
Lester comes back out into the Auburn backfield to join the freshman quarterback. Second down and 7. Lester. Well, he got face masked in the middle of that pile. Of the way his head turned around, he got 4 more. Brad Lester, again, a local product from Parkview High School, playing basically in his hometown. But a lot of these kids are playing in their home states.
And they know that at any time a turnover will lose the game.
Low snap, Burns fielded it, picks it up. Touchdown! Auburn wins in overtime.
Cody Burns ran up the middle and got it in the end zone and won. And we didn't have to kick the extra point. We won 23-20. That was it. So Borges was gone. Franklin was the new offensive coordinator. And also, Will Muschamp left at this point. I think to go to Texas to follow. See, here's another weird thing. Chizik had left Auburn in 04 after an undefeated season to go to Texas to be Mack Brown's defensive coordinator, and there he pitched another undefeated season in the Vince Young year.
In 2005, the Vince Young Rose Bowl year.
Yeah, that was Chizik was the defensive coordinator on that team. People forget. So Chizik went undefeated 2 years in a row as a defensive coordinator on two different teams. So we were
and
like,
then got the Iowa State job.
Yeah, and then got the Iowa State job, right. And so then we brought in Muschamp, and then Mack Brown hired him, and we're like, what is the deal with Mack Brown hiring our defensive coordinator constantly? And I want to say it wasn't the last time he did it. But yeah. In any case, so we lost Muschamp, and so we went and got the guy who was later the Iowa State head coach after Chizik.
Paul Rhodes.
Yeah, it gets very incestuous and weird here, right? Where between Mack Brown and Texas and Iowa State and Auburn, you get coaches doing kind of like a merry-go-round there. Because Paul Rhodes comes in, I think, from Pitt, right? I think he had been Pitt's defensive coordinator in 07 when they beat maybe West Virginia.
Yes.
And Tuberville hired him. And then when he left Auburn after this 1 year, he went and became Iowa State's head coach when we hired Chizik. Something like that. Our defensive coordinator went to them, and their head coach became ours. Really, really hard to follow. But, yeah, that's what happened. All right. So that gets us into the last year on our walk through the second half of the Tuberville era, 2008. Paul Rose is defensive coordinator. We're running Tony Franklin's air raid. Here's Tony Franklin prior to the season talking about Brandon Cox and Cody Burns.
How is that quarterback race shaping up?
It's good. I mean, it's a really good problem. It's the best problem I think I've had in my life. I've had a lot of problems. This is a really good one. They're both good. They're both competitive. They both are good leaders. They both like each other. The team likes both of them. That's a really good problem. So, I mean, there's nothing negative about it at all. It's nothing but positive.
Have you put any time frame on it when you want to make a decision?
No, I haven't. It's like I said, it's one of those deals that the problem is so good that I don't even want to think about it, you know, right now. Just keep evaluating every day and realizing that regardless of that, is that they're both going to play. They're both good. They're both good enough to win, so they'll both play.
And the wheels start falling off very rapidly. This is a year we end up 5-7, 2-6 in the SEC, and after September, we won one more game the rest of the season, and that was Tennessee Martin.
Oof. Ugh.
Other than UT Martin, we did not win again after the Tennessee game. So it was weird, all right?
That's how you get coaching change, man.
That's how you get a coaching change, that's for sure. So we beat Louisiana Monroe, Southern Miss, at Mississippi State in the infamous 3-2 game. Got to talk about that one for a minute because we know from Twitter that our Auburn family is obsessed with this game, right? This was
Sylvester Croom against Tuberville.
Neither team could play a lick of offense, or you could say they both played great defense. I don't know about that. And it was 3-0 our way, and then we took a safety late, and it was 3-2. So, in other words, we scored every point in this game. We just scored 3 for us and 2 for them. So, 3-2 in the bottom of the ninth inning. So, we were 3-0, and then LSU gets another. Oh, this game drove me crazy. This is another one of those last play of the game type, or this was the last minute rather than the last second. But LSU comes into Auburn and beats us on their last play of the game, 26-21. And it galled me, too, because these 2 years, their quarterback was that Harvard kid. Remember? Guy that transferred from Harvard?
Yes, I know you're talking about.
We had no business losing to that guy. And I think we lost to him twice. Just horrible. So we somehow beat Tennessee 14-12. On CBS, and little did we know, that's pretty much going to be it. Now, I was at the next game when the wheels start falling off at Vanderbilt. We're number 13. Vanderbilt's not bad. They're number 19 that year. And we scored early to go up, like, should have gone up 14-0. And I remember we missed an extra point, and it was like 13-0. And I remember sitting there thinking, ha ha, it's a good thing we're playing Vanderbilt, because if it was, you know, a good team, missing that extra point might come back to haunt us. Came back to haunt us, and they scored 2 touchdowns and beat us 14-13. And I left the stadium going, I can't believe we lost to Vanderbilt, and I can't believe we lost to Vanderbilt because we missed an extra point like the first quarter and then never came close to scoring again the rest of the game. It was horrible. This was Ben Tate's, I believe, year that he was supposed to be our running back, and Vanderbilt pretty much shut him down after the first quarter. We lose a close one to Arkansas. We lose at West Virginia badly.
I was at that game.
Oh, 34-7. Wasn't it close until late, maybe?
Yeah, we hung around, and then the second half, they just trampled us, and their students were not pleasant either.
So they had that running back, right? They had a good running back, a little one, little guy.
Yes.
And we get some revenge on him the next year, but we'll get to that. We lose to Ole Miss. We beat UT Martin. Woo! And then we lose a close one to Georgia at home, number 13 Georgia, 17-13. And then Saban begins Sabanizing us 36-0 in Bryant-Denny. We had at that point, we hadn't talked about that tonight. After 2007, when we beat Saban in his first season, that was game number 6 in Tuberville's 6-game streak.
So yes.
Talk for a minute about the streak and what it meant. Even if we had other issues during the Tuberville years, What did it mean as an Auburn person during those years to be dominating Alabama like that?
Tommy Tuberville, who has won five in a row, is now on the verge of winning six straight. Auburn has never beaten Alabama six straight years. Now, he upset everybody last year when he flashed the five sign to the Auburn crowd. What will he do winning number six? Going to have to use the thumb.
Well, that's what the fans are all doing. We even saw the gal in Iraq doing that, the five fingers and the one thumb. I don't know whether Tommy Tuberville will do it or not.
What are they going to do, Holly?
Well, they've been trying to coach him up in the PR department not to do it, not to give him that photograph moment for all Alabama fans to hate all year. But I can tell you, I saw them today in the bookstore. They've already made up bumper stickers that say next hand. They had five. The next hand means six, and the bumper stickers are already printed.
That we never
did. It was huge. I mean, we're talking about a period of time when we totally dominated Alabama. We owned them. We owned the state. They couldn't get out of their own way, and we were winning every game. And even when we didn't have things going right, we still beat them. And it was huge, and Tuberville was kind of in their heads.
He was.
And it was really, really good. And it was also, again, like 6 years in a row is a huge winning streak. And they haven't done that to us.
No.
You know, not since the 70s.
Not since the 70s and the Bear.
So it really was the most dominant period we've had over them ever, I think. And it really is something to be proud of and something to remember.
And it's like I said, even though things were weird with LSU during those years, some years things were getting weird with Georgia, we still had that beating Alabama every year. And you can keep a lot of goodwill as the Auburn head coach if you just beat Alabama regularly. But, of course, they brought in Saban, and that's, as I think everybody knows now, that's going to change that around fairly substantially, though not as much as I think Alabama fans would like you to believe. They still don't beat us more than two or three years in a row before we come back and beat them again, and nobody else does that, just us. Just like we were the only team that used to regularly give Spurrier a problem at Florida, we were one of the only teams, and certainly conference teams, that regularly gives, you know, I know that A&M beat them once, I know that Ole Miss beat them twice, but consistently since he's been there, no.
The other thing that happened in this season is we dumped Tony Franklin before the end.
Yeah. Here's Tommy Tuberville at the press conference after firing Franklin.
Most everybody heard earlier today what happened. I've decided to make a change, you know, with Tony Franklin. It hurts bad. That's a difficult situation, difficult thing to do in the middle of the season. My responsibility is this football team, and it always will be. Tony's a good person, a good guy. He's got a great family, good family man. Basically when it all comes down to it, it's about production. And I didn't think the last few weeks we were making any progress. And I come to the decision this morning that we would make that change. We're going to go forward. We're going to be positive about it. And, we'll go from here.
Yeah. It was the dramatic scene of him carrying the books out and getting in his car and leaving.
Right. That's a very good point. Yeah, because it just wasn't working out. Tuberville was trying to run the spread, but he also wanted the offense to do the things he wanted it to do. And it's just that classic clash between the offensive coordinator who's wanting to do his thing versus the head coach that's wanting to control the tempo and run the clock. And it just wasn't ever really going to work. I don't think it would have worked any better if Gus had been his offensive coordinator, honestly.
No, but the spread was at this point taking over college football.
Yeah.
And some of it was maybe not the right guy. But, he's had success other places. But some of it was, you're right, Tuberville not wanting to let go of the reins a little bit.
Right. And so he leaves partway through the season. And I believe Ensminger is our offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Lord help us for a couple of games there. And at the end of the season,
Tommy Tuberville out at Auburn. He spent 10 years on the Plains, but his team went 5-7 this year. They lost Alabama 36-0 in the Iron Bowl to close out the season. It was their worst loss to Alabama since 1972. You may remember just in 2004, Tuberville went 13-0 and won the SEC title at Auburn, but they really struggled trying to adjust to that spread offense this season. ESPN College Football Insider Joe Shad joins us now for more on this. Why did this happen?
You know, when I visited with Tommy Tuberville late in the season, he said to me, not everyone's going to like me. Not everyone's going to have my back. Well, it was pretty obvious that in the end, the athletic director, Jay Jacobs, who made this call, and some prominent behind-the-scenes boosters who once tried to hire Bobby Petrino, and then subsequently, you might remember, Stan, saw Auburn go undefeated after that, they got their way. They got the leverage because, as Tommy Tuberville said, he finally had that one real bad year. 5-7, lost to Alabama. Stan, they'd beaten Alabama almost every year.
Right.
Year after year, they beat their biggest rival. And finally, people who wanted Tommy Tuberville gone are going to get their way because they're going to say after 10 years, they're ready for a new voice and they're ready for a new offense.
Right. Prior to this season, in the 4 years prior, he'd won 82% of his games over those 4 years. They won 5 of their last 6 bowl games. I mean, and again, the 13-0 season in 2004. Who's Auburn looking at to replace him now?
Well, obviously, this has just happened. But I learned that last night, before Tommy Tuberville was told that he was fired, that someone on the Auburn Board of Trustees reached out to Mike Leach, the Texas Tech coach, who was already interviewed at Washington. Obviously, Texas Tech would like to lock them up. Bobby Petrino, not going to happen. They already went down that road. It's in Bobby Petrino's contract that he can't go to another SEC West school. So part of the problem here, Stan, is that some of the hottest names in college football, Brian Kelly at Cincinnati, already announced he's staying put. Chris Peterson at Boise State, likely staying put. Who are you going to hire? I'm not sure.
All right. And Tommy Tuberville, he's a pretty good coach, judging from his record. He probably will get another chance somewhere as well. All right, Joe, thanks a lot for stopping by. We take a look at Auburn over the last 4 years. You can see their record in the SEC declined since that unbeaten season in 2004. The Tigers won't go to a bowl game for the first time since 99. Tuberville will be okay from a financial standpoint. Auburn owes him $3 million within 30 days and another $3 million within 1 year.
It's another one of these things, just like with Terry Bowden, where it depends on who you ask as to what happened. And the way that the Auburn, you know, the athletic director, Jay Jacobs, at that point handled it leaves some mystery, because we ended up giving Tuberville, if I recall correctly, his payoff as if it was... It was a weird thing where on the one hand, it was like he was voluntarily resigning.
Resigning.
But on the other hand, it was like he's being fired with cause. And so, as I recall, we didn't have to pay him a certain amount of money, and yet we did anyway. I feel like Jacob said we felt like we owed it to him or something.
We did. Like, again, we asked him to resign. He resigned. He could have said, no, I'm not going to resign. Fire me and pay me the money and got the lawyers all involved and sued Auburn or whatever. But we just talked about the 6 games in a row over Alabama. We talked about the 2004 season, 2006 season. Like, Tuberville did great things for Auburn while he was there.
Yes.
And so I didn't have a problem with parting ways amiably and paying him the money.
Yeah. I feel like there were 3 or 4 moments in his entire Auburn career of 10 years. There were at least 3 moments that, if you really wanted to split hairs, you know, and get technical, you could have found reason to say, let's move on. And in every one of those previous occasions, he did something that made you say, all right, you know, you can have another couple of years. Whether it be, you know, he changed out his coordinators multiple times. I don't remember
yes.
a coach. He was one of the first to just, like, chuck guys over the side every other year. You know, but he did different things. He evolved as a coach and did different things every year to kind of keep things fresh. But by 2008, and the way that season ended, it was kind of a deal where it's like, if you look at his entire career at Auburn, we love him. We loved his personality. We loved all the things he had done for us, and that streak over Alabama and the 2004 season and all that. Yes. But it was like, you know, it's been 10 years and you've pulled this rabbit out of your hat 2 or 3 times before. If you really want to go this time, or if the powers that be are really ready to let you go, you know, that's fine. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that was my attitude was kind of like, if he comes back, I trust he'll figure something else out. And if he doesn't come back, you know, he's had a decade at this point. You know what I mean? I was fairly sanguine about it.
That's right.
So
no, I mean, you're right. Like, we appreciated him, but also, like, the things were clearly in decline.
Yeah, and there was a sense that Saban was bringing something big to Alabama, and Tuberville had been fine against Francione and against Shula. He had been fine. But you got the sense that Tuberville was like a World War II general and Alabama had just invented nuclear weapons. You know what I mean? And
that's
so
right.
We're not using propeller-driven airplanes anymore. We're not using diesel-powered submarines anymore. And so maybe we need to start thinking about anti-ballistic missiles. You know, we need to start thinking about Minuteman missiles and Pershings and all that ourselves over here. And so I don't know that that's exactly what we ended up doing in 2009, but you know what? It worked out.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't necessarily because we brought in a Cold War general. It was because we brought in a general who eventually brought in a nuclear warhead from College Park, Georgia, by way of Gainesville and Texas. If you know who I'm talking about here, who wore number two on his chest and could leap tall buildings in a single bound, we're going to get to that. So to wrap things up for tonight, Tommy Tuberville would ride off into the sunset and eventually to Lubbock, Texas, bless his heart, before Cincinnati. And so let's put a coda on the Tuberville years real quick. How do you look back now on the Tuberville decade, 99 through 08? How do you see it now?
When I think about Tuberville, I think about the good things. I think about the 6 years in a row of Brown game. I think about 2004. Those are the two things that come to mind immediately. I mean, I think about some of the specific games, the honk, Zach Brody game, the beating Urban Meyer games. I think about the jet gate and the turnover and coordinators and that kind of stuff.
How about a couple of Arkansas games where those running backs are still running?
Yes, the Fred Talley game is infamous, but I think he came to Auburn at a time when, again, there wasn't a lot of talent on the roster, and he recruited like crazy. Yeah. And by 2004, we had as much talent as anybody in the country. There was a great roster, and you see it not just in that season, but in the seasons to follow with the guys who were young players in that team who were barely playing. So I think that going from where he inherited the team to that, I think, is the single biggest thing he ever did.
By the way, another funny little one-off on Tuberville. He appeared in the movie version of The Blind Side, and I believe it was after he had already left Auburn. He played himself as Auburn's coach in The Blind Side. I think it was after he left Auburn because they were showing the recruiting of that player, and so Saban was the LSU coach, I think, and Tuberville was the Auburn coach at that point. Is that how you remember it?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Tommy Tuberville, Auburn University.
Leanne Dewey, nice to meet you. Michael?
We want you, we need you, but the other thing is, Mike, you need us.
So, yeah, I agree. I mean, with Tuberville, it's funny because with Tuberville, you can point to so many moments that were great, just great. And you can point to so many moments, you just scratch your head and go, what the heck happened there? Like, for every big win over LSU or Alabama, there's like the 3-2 game with Mississippi State, or getting blown out by Saban in his last game, or, you know, whatever. I mean, and by the way, Tuberville's not the only coach whose last game as an Auburn coach was getting blown out by Alabama. But, of course, there's Alabama coaches whose last game was getting blown out by Auburn, too. So it kind of runs both ways. But, yeah, I think that time has softened the edges, and we look back at the Tuberville years as a very, very net positive era. He was just such a good fit. You know, he's the kind of guy that just fit in at Auburn. He fit in hanging out at the barbecue place, you know, and chatting with people. And he had those politician skills that we talked about on our last episode. But he didn't have him the sense of like a button-down lawyer politician, more like a country politician that just kind of knows everybody in town and ends up being the mayor or the governor or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there went Tuberville into the sunset, and it would only be a matter of time until we would look around to find the new coach. And all the usual suspects were being mentioned. And you can back me up on this. As far as I know, I was the only person right out of the gate saying, hey, what about Gene Chizik? I was saying all over the internet back then in 2008, what about Gene Chizik? He went undefeated at Auburn. He went undefeated at Texas. He's a great defensive coach. He knows Auburn. He's a likable guy, right? We know him. We already know him pretty well. Nobody was talking about him. And then lo and behold, we go up and we hire Gene Chizik from Iowa State, where he had gone, 6-18 or something?
6-7, yes.
Something ridiculous like that. But it was at Iowa State, and people are like, well, nobody was going to win in 2 years at Iowa State. That's, you know, that's not a, Saban would have gone 6-18 at Iowa State, and so, or 6-12 or whatever his record was. So we fly him to Auburn, and when he gets off the plane...
I'd love Gardner. I'll take Brady Hoke, hell, Patrick Nix. Any of them. Any of those guys would be better. Any of them. Any of them.
The guy's famously, infamously yelling, "We want a winner, not a loser." And lo and behold, we had a good 2009, and as we'll talk about on our next episode, just two short years later, a certain 6'5 quarterback wearing a red cape and blue tights under that Auburn uniform with a big white number 2 on his chest would show up and absolutely dominate as no player in probably SEC history ever had before. And that, you can credit whoever you want. You can credit Gus Malzahn. You can credit Gene Chizik. But we wouldn't have had that coaching staff without Chizik. And they went and got that quarterback. And we won the national championship 2 years after we finished an entire October, November, and December schedule with one win. So it all kind of worked out in the end, didn't it?
It did. I mean, it really did. Things work out for a reason, and it did with Chizik.
Yes, it absolutely worked out that way. We had a good 2009 season, and then just a year after that, we all got to witness...
Byram waits for the snap in the place. There it is. The kick is up. The kick is good! Auburn wins!
We Believed is a production of the AU Wishbone and White Rocket Entertainment in association with thewareaglereader.com. I'm Reynolds Wolf. The show was produced and engineered by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer and brought to you by all of our great supporters on patreon.com. To join the AU Wishbone family, visit auwishbone.com. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.